Big show for you coming up as we preview a pretty massive week 8 NFL slate. The Chiefs, is it time to get Patrick Mahomes back in your lineups with DeAndre Hopkins in the mix? What about Baker Mayfield, a guy you've probably trusted all season long? Can he still be a fantasy option without Chris Godwin and Mike Evans? Andy Behrens and I will recap that, discuss it all later. Tara Roberts joins the show to talk about make or break players heading into week 8, the guys you probably want to consider getting in that final flex spot. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, October 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day. A hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that, as he always does here on Friday, is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Things are good. I was just thinking the other day about what I, you know, the thing I appreciate most about this podcast, this one that we do each week, previewing. I don't have to pretend that I know things that I can't possibly know. You get thrown into that situation a lot as a fantasy analyst, right? Where you have to just emphatically bang the table for a thing that you're certain is going to happen. But here, I feel like we have a little bit of freedom to not have to know everything, because we don't. We can just talk it through.
I mean, yeah, hey, we're just asking questions, right? Yeah. Like, Andy's just asking questions here. Answers? That's up to you, the people out there. We're all on this journey together. Andy's not going to open the book and give you all the answers. We're just asking questions.
I'm just giving you stuff to worry about. That's all. That's all. That's all we're here for.
Your superpower.
Just gonna make you feel bad.
Yeah, your superpower, Andy, as a fantasy analyst, has always been to, like, I'm going to give you something to worry about. Maybe it's going to be, you know, at the very last minute. Just a few minutes before the 1 p.m. kickoff on Sunday morning. Yeah, what about this star player that's in a tough spot? Don't know what you should do about that, but maybe, I don't know. That's your superpower as a fantasy analyst. I don't know if that's what
that's
you wanted, you know, in your career. You know, as a head honcho, one of the big wigs in the business, literally. You do have a big wig.
I have a wig.
Right, not always. For the people watching on YouTube, that Andy has is not a wig. If you're not familiar, Andy is a legal expert, a certified fantasy football judge. He plays one on internet TV. But anyways, we're way off track here. What we do here on the Friday show is not typically go around the horn about Andy's hair, whether it's a wig or any sort of lack of accountability type stuff. We do really try to preview the week here on the show. Andy joins us at the top of the show to discuss three burning fantasy questions he wants answered this week and three matchups that he says deserve your attention. Then in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts joins me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. We also will get into our keys to winning each week. But Andy, let's start by just asking some questions here. We're just asking questions. Give me the first burning fantasy question that you want answered this week.
Yeah, obviously it involves DeAndre Hopkins and the Chiefs. Can't avoid it. You and Tice had a great back and forth about what DeAndre is and what he can do. And so we don't need to repeat all that. It's more whether DeAndre Hopkins can sort of unlock a Chiefs offense that has been, I don't know, certainly not everything we wanted it to be. What does this do for Mahomes? And I don't know that anything happens this week necessarily. I don't necessarily think that after a midweek trade, right, like a Wednesday trade, we get some huge Hopkins surge. But I do think it's meaningful. You know, whatever you may think that DeAndre is at this stage in his career at 32, coming off a pretty good season, but he's 32 years old and he is not vintage DeAndre Hopkins. He is still like a real wide receiver that we can, you know, that can be used by a team in multiple ways. He's not, you know, part of this just weird collection of misfit, like, kick returners and tight ends that the Chiefs are down to throw into now that they don't have Hollywood Brown. They don't have Rashee Rice. They presumably don't have Juju this week. Like, I don't know. He's a real receiver that we can move around and do stuff with, and he can get himself open. And like, he is someone who, you know, working with a quarterback who can actually, the timing we assume is going to be better, can make anticipation throws, can put the ball on the right shoulder, you know, can do all the things that great quarterbacks do. I feel like we can get a better version of the Chiefs offense. Was he the best possible receiver out there that the Chiefs could add, assuming that they were always going to add one? Maybe not. They probably kicked the tires on him, though, for a few years now. They've surely had DeAndre Hopkins discussions before and know how they'll use him. So, I mean, you just look at the Chiefs offense right now, and the whole fantasy industry, basically, for the last like week and a half, has just been bagging on Patrick Mahomes, which, by the way, this is when we have a real buy low situation in fantasy, when like the whole industry is attacking a guy and saying you can't start him, you probably have to drop him. And there's a compelling case to be made there. The man hasn't thrown a touchdown pass since September, has a 300 yard game recently, but like hasn't thrown a touchdown pass since September, had the rushing score, a week ago. He still makes, you know, there's one or two plays a week that you're like, oh man, Patrick Mahomes is the only guy who does that. He's still great in clutch situations, but like the fantasy numbers haven't been there. I get it. He's also still the best quarterback in football. And this is what buy lows look like when the whole industry is saying you got to do this thing, you know, but in fact, we're talking about an all-time player. You know, there's an opportunity to do the other thing and maybe benefit from it. But a lot of this is going to come down to, does Hopkins stay healthy the rest of the season? Do we get, you know, again, we're not going to get vintage DeAndre Hopkins, but can we just get last year's version of DeAndre Hopkins, and can he stay healthy? I know I gave you a lot to, you can go any kind of direction with that. But I think there are some huge open questions with the Chiefs offense right now. I mean, shoot, Mahomes ADOT right now is like 6.1, or 6.1. That's a crazy use of Patrick Mahomes. But look at the cast of characters they have, and what else are they going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Look at the cast of characters, right? It's Travis Kelce at this stage of his career, still a good player, but not the same player that he once was, probably not even the same player that he was last year. Although, again, we all know that we're saying this about Kelce, and he will catch 8 passes per game on the way to the Super Bowl. We all do understand that that is going to happen once we get to the postseason. But not the player that he once was. You've got Sky Moore out there with 3 targets, 0 catches, 2 drops on the season. You've got the wind sprinter of all wind sprinters in Justin Watson. And then, yeah, you have Xavier Worthy, who just like the crazy thing about Worthy. And I do think it's unavoidable watching him play, like the all of the issues that you possibly could have imagined, and I joked with Nate yesterday that he keeps sizing him down. Like he started the year at 165 with Worthy, and now he's saying he's 157 pounds, which, yeah, you know, players do get skinnier throughout the course of the season. They're doing a lot of running. So I don't know, you know, but all the struggles that you could possibly imagine a guy of that size having, it's unavoidable when you watch him play that those are real. Now, he is, of course, going to be open on these big post routes and stuff like that, but that's a very limited menu for a first-round wide receiver who wasn't supposed to be a big volume guy, certainly in his rookie year, and maybe not ever. So it's like kind of unfair to bang him on that, because it's just what probably wasn't part of what they wanted. But this is just the cast of characters they have. Juju is there for one big game, and now he's hurt. So adding Hopkins here, yeah, hopefully, I think, can lift the floor and the ceiling of the offense. Again, it's not just what Hopkins brings to the table, but also what he can do to unlock other players, both from a deployment perspective and, you know, if like, again, if he's going to, he's the guy running these X receiver go routes as opposed to Justin Watson. I don't care what you think Hopkins has left. Defenses are going to account and respect that more than it is if it's Justin Watson. And Hopkins can still go up and get it on those plays. I've seen the evidence of it on film this year. It can still happen. So really like the addition here. I do want to talk about the Mahomes aspect of all of this, Andy, because while you're right, it seems like every fantasy analyst on Twitter is constantly reminding you that, you know, giving you like permission to drop Patrick Mahomes and give you permission to bench Patrick Mahomes, or, oh, look at the stats of this guy. Look at what he's put up dating back to last year. If this was any other quarterback, you would have dropped them for a streamer right now. I get it. You have been pushing back on this. I don't know if you're pushing back on it or just like kind of making fun of it, but I will say, and you can tell me if you are, but I will say from the, just the roster trends perspective, like I'm looking at Yahoo leagues right now, Patrick Mahomes is 99% rostered. So nobody's listening to this this drops. Sorry, yeah, folks. Yeah. Nobody, at least it's playing on our platform, is listening to all of your advice to drop Patrick Mahomes. And he is still started in 65% of leagues. That's actually bumped up in the up 2% recently, just because I think maybe the Hopkins news, but also they are playing the Raiders this week. So is this your chance, Andy, to push back on this industry wide notion that like it's over for Patrick Mahomes?
Well, it's not, I mean, it's not like most of these guys are wrong, right? Because they're really just displaying, hey, here's his weekly finish over, you know, in each week this season. And it has been great. Like, there's no arguing that. It's a question of whether they, you know, they really intend to have like this version of the offense that they've rolled out there for almost half a season now. Is this can't be what we want to get to January with. I don't think it is. It's obviously, you know, this receiving core was never the plan for Kansas City coming into the year. And you and Nate did a good job talking about how, like, you know, almost everybody pre-Hopkins in this receiving core who's still healthy is a guy where, like, we can only ask you to do this one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's just really hard to build an offense out of that when nobody's a generalist, nobody can do multiple things, nobody can get downfield, you know, nobody can be like inside outside. It's just really hard when you're down, again, when you're down to like return specialists and weird tight ends, it is really hard to build a passing game out of that. So I was always assuming that they would make an addition in the receiving core. I don't even know if they're done. Like, I still don't think this is a great Fair. Receiving core. They might not be done. The trade deadline hasn't come yet, so they might not be finished here. So I just think there's nothing but the potential for growth and improvement to this. I'll say it. Ecosystem.
There we go, baby.
You know, I he's also Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, we don't, I mean, you know, he didn't get bad. He's like 29 years old. We're not talking about the 40-year-old version of Patrick Mahomes here. He's fine. He does super inventive things each week. This is actually, you know, usually when we get these disconnects between the actual real life quality of play of a quarterback and where they are in fantasy terms, It's flipped. It's the season where Blake Bortles is like the QB4, but he leads the league in interceptions and fumbles and sacks. Or it's Jameis Winston throwing 30 interceptions and being like the QB4, the QB5. It's not usually, man, Mahomes is playing. I mean, Mahomes is making like genius level plays every week, has mm-hmm. been great, is in the MVP conversation, and yet he's, I don't know, what is he, like the QB 18 on the year, the
22.
QB 20, something like, yeah, he's not even really in the fantasy conversation. He's certainly not in the fantasy MVP conversation. It doesn't usually go this way. It's usually the quarterback who is like real life bad, but volume is taking care of it in fantasy. It's not this situation. This is like, I don't know. This used to happen with Troy Aikman, I guess, but it's been a long time since we had one of these situations where we have an actual great quarterback who is just not paying any of the fantasy bills. But I think that can change again as we add like a real competent, still quite good receiver to this mix.
Yeah, I mean, if I told you before the season that Patrick Mahomes would be outscored in fantasy by Bo Nix, Trevor Lawrence, Sam Darnold, yeah. Daniel yeah. Jones, you'd probably say, well, there's also then a 0% chance that the Chiefs would be number one in offensive success rate. And yet all of that is true. At the same time, the Chiefs are the yeah. number one offense in success rate, which is, again, just like a down and distance efficiency metric. And that perfectly kind of encapsulates what the Chiefs are right now, Andy. As you said, like, they're moving the ball. I think that DeAndre Hopkins can be a part of that. I wouldn't say Mahomes has played perfect football. I don't think you are saying that either. I think we can. Obviously, mm-hmm. he has more interceptions than touchdowns. That's not a perfect metric, but it is just like he's made some mistakes. He's left some plays on the field. Wouldn't say he's playing perfect football, but he's doing what he's got to do to win. And even from like a fantasy angle, it's not as if he's like killed you any given week. Sometimes if you've got a guy that's averaging like 15 points per game, it's because, man, they've got these eruption spots, but then they're just, it's the Bortles. Like, there are those brutal 4 weeks. Mahomes has, I mean, been 16, 14, 17, 14, 14, 14. Like, it's yeah, just been this steady yeah. kind of cranking it out. Hopefully we can get Hopkins in here to just boost that ceiling and maybe even get the floor to like 16 as opposed to 14. I don't know.
As much as anything, like, the Chiefs just can't be an offense where you really only have to worry about like the 5 yards in front of the line of scrimmage, right? Because you get situations like last week where they get the batted pass interception. Like some of these interceptions are, you know, they all go on Mahomes's ledger, but we had one last week where Worthy fell down on a route. We had the batted pass, but like, we're going to get a lot of those. Like, I don't know if everything is really constrained and we're only throwing within 5 or 6 yards of the line of scrimmage, we're going to get stuff like that. So,
I mean, I can't remember who made the point, but someone this week did make the point that a lot of Mahomes, actually, I think it was Bill Barnwell. I saw a clip that was from around the horn. Yeah. Barnwell made the point that like a lot of Mahomes' interceptions have come on contested plays. Like the Worthy interception against the Bengals, the Worthy interception against press coverage this past week where he just fell to the ground after some contact. Mm-hmm. Juju Smith-Schuster in the Saints game when he
could have
been a touchdown. Instead, it was a pick by Kalen Saunders, you know, and he runs that back, big 300-pound plus defensive lineman. So yeah, I mean that is a good point that like those plays, those are the Hopkins plays, right? The contested passes are the Hopkins specialty here.
Yeah. So I think that can make things better immediately. Also, just not again, not that DeAndre Hopkins is necessarily the guy who gets you like 25 yards downfield, 30 yards downfield, but man, he can hit the intermediate area of the field. He can get you 10 yards. He can get you 15 yards. And that just hasn't been a big part of what the Chiefs are doing.
Brass tacks here, Andy. You have Patrick Mahomes ranked as your QB12 this week, which is basically saying like, I mean, yeah, I guess if you have your boy Caleb Williams or Sam Darnold, maybe you can play those guys over Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. Stupid to say Sam Darnold because we're recording this on Thursday. You're gonna have known the Thursday night game, but you get my point here, people out there. Yeah. Like you can start one of those guys that have really been a raging success as a QB2 that's now maybe a QB1, but you don't have to go out and bench Patrick Mahomes, especially against the Raiders. Is that kind of what you're intimating to the people here?
Yeah, I'm probably, you know, I'm sure I've been wrong on Patrick Mahomes all year, right? Right, and it feels like one of those situations where I'm just going to continue to be wrong. But like, I don't know. I'll place small bets on all-time inner circle Hall of Fame players like this. Like I have a very difficult time sitting somebody who is so obviously better than the other names around him on the in the list. Also, like I might have him a little bit farther down the board this week if we don't know that Jaden Daniels is going to go. We don't, true, you know, we all of a sudden Baker Mayfield is an untrustable quarterback through no fault of his own. We've just got some situations around the league where like all of a sudden I'm not feeling as good about some guys who would have normally perhaps been ahead of Mahomes.
Let's go to our next one here, and this is definitely another quarterback quandary here. Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. Let's have the Anthony Richardson conversation again, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah. Shoot. I mean, this is basically, can Anthony Richardson get right, and what would that even look like against the one defense that he has actually kind of lit up this year? Even I say lit up, but I only mean it for fantasy, right? Because he wasn't even, I don't know, like he wasn't great in the opener against Houston. It was another game in which he completed fewer than 50% of his passes. Had a couple of touchdowns, had the incredible deep ball to Pierce, right? But he missed some stuff. Good day on the ground. But man, the story of his season to this point, he's not even completing 50% of his throws. He's completing 48.5% of his throws, which is just not, I mean, that's a number from like 1975. That is not a thing that we see in the modern NFL. So that's pretty wild. The yards per completion are high because he, you know, it's all skewed by these 60-yard shots to Alec Pierce. But there has not been a lot to love here. They got to keep playing him. Like if you think he's the, you know, future of the franchise at quarterback, you got to keep playing him. You probably can't go back to Joe Flacco as long as Anthony Richardson is healthy. I get what they're doing. He's so hard to rank right now because I still hold out the possibility that Anthony Richardson in any given week can be a top three fantasy quarterback, top one fantasy quarterback, right? He's got that rushing upside, but man, it's been so rough to watch. Like they're missing so many should be layup throws that it has just been really painful. And so I've got him buried in the ranks this week. And I don't know how to express my opinion about Anthony Richardson in fantasy ranks anymore. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. And unlike Mahomes, the people have started to beyond move off of Anthony Richardson. He's only 74% rostered. That has gone down this week by 4%. He is only started in 32% of leagues, which maybe those are super flex leagues. Maybe you got somebody who's asleep at the wheel, kind of just still rocking and rolling with Anthony Richardson. Although, to your point, like, his best game of the season, I think both from a fantasy perspective, well, definitely from a fantasy perspective, and probably from a real life perspective too, was this Texans game. And it's not as if there's any, like, and this is the tough part with Richardson, is there's not like really a reason you can point to other than, yeah, him and Alec Pierce connected on some miracle balls, and he ran the ball more. Now, his designed rush attempts, or just his rush attempts overall, were up last week, and I kind of feel two different ways about that. It's really hard, again, to pinpoint how I feel about him as a designed rusher, because objectively good for fantasy, probably good for the offense to have him as a rusher. Like, you want him to be making those plays. That's part of the Richardson experience, is that, yeah, even if the passing is shaky, he can move the ball, he can move the offense because of his legs. At the same time, basically anytime he trucks any player 15 yards down the field and we've already got the first down, yeah, I kind of hold my breath a little bit. So that's sort of the confliction there. But also, I do think getting Jonathan Taylor back will help. We haven't really ever seen this offense at full strength this year. We haven't really seen, like, Taylor, Downs, Richardson all on the field together, which seems like it's just been the curse of the Colts the last 2 years with Richardson there. We have to keep working in small sample sizes and making these big proclamations about it. So, yeah, I've said with Richardson, even for after the week one result, had a conversation with our mutual buddy, Chris Harris, on his show, where I was like, I want to avoid making, like, sweeping proclamations about Anthony Richardson until I get the full result of this season. I still feel that way, but when you're making decisions weekly with your lineup, as much as I love all of these Colts pass catchers, they're obviously, like, I think, untrustable guys in fantasy until you see Richardson really give us a steady passing performance.
Yeah. And last week was gross. Like, that game was disgusting. They're facing Miami, a defense that's rolled over for some teams so far this year. And we get a 10 for 24 performance from Richardson. Rough watch. Again, fine on the ground, but just, not a lot of points there in the game involving two defenses that haven't been any good this year. It's got to get better. Houston is a huge challenge, but it is the one team that he has actually put up numbers against.
Let's go to our third and final question here from you, Andy, which has to do with another quarterback sort of in changing ecosystems, conditions, whatever you want to say. This one centers around the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the guy you mentioned, Baker Mayfield, earlier, who is, I love to say it just because it's so funny, he's the quarterback two in fantasy right now.
Yeah. The question basically comes down to whether we can even keep Baker Mayfield on rosters and can we play him again, which is wild because he leads the NFL in touchdown passes. Right? Like, Baker Mayfield has had this eye-opening year. It's been great. He has made he's made plenty of errors of aggression, right? Like, there have been some, regrettable throws along the way. He's Baker Mayfield. But in terms of completion percentage, he's over 70% on the year. I mean, he's just setting career highs across the board, and he has played legit well. But you can't separate that from the fact that he's also working with, a Hall of Fame receiver in Mike Evans, Chris Godwin playing at an all-pro level, was on pace to have perhaps the best season of a great career. And now he's out of the mix for the rest of the season. We're going to be down Mike Evans for at least a month. And now we got to build the whole passing game out of Cade Otton and Sterling Shepard and McMillan and Palmer. And they're saying the right things. Hey, we're going to put these guys in positions that are advantageous to them and all that. But, like, man, they are crying out to make an addition via trade. I don't know if it'll happen. Hopkins would have been fine for them. There's plenty of other options out there, but they probably need, basically this comes down to me thinking that they probably need to add somebody notable if I'm even going to keep Baker Mayfield on rosters, which is crazy, again, because Baker has 18 touchdown passes right now.
Yeah, he's playing beautiful football with her. He's first in touchdown passes. He's tied with a bunch of dudes for second in interceptions. But he's still completing a bunch of passes, as you mentioned, 70.5% completion percentage. Yeah, I've said this about the Bucs. Like, the fun part about their offense is that, like, three things are going on here. One, they've got just two dudes at wide receiver. One of the best, probably three, four tandems in the NFL. When Chris Godwin's playing like he has this year, I think they're in that conversation. They've got two dudes that can do, and they're very different, which allows you to do, you know, do a lot of different things. Like Evans is an outside coverage dictator. Godwin's that power slot who is leading the NFL in yards after catch before this injury. So just a huge loss there. But that's part of it, is that they have these two dudes at wide receiver. You also have what I think is a beautifully designed and well constructed and well called offense by Liam Cohen. That is probably still going to remain true, even if you don't have the same personnel. I do still, based on what I've seen, with regardless of the players, just the design of the offense and the way they've approached it, I really liked what Liam Cohen has done. So I still have faith in that. And then you have a quarterback in Baker Mayfield. This is the third thing, who's just had this like devil may care attitude to playing. And that's led to a lot of success too. I was charting Jalen McMillan week two against the Lions this morning, and Baker's touchdown run in that game is a QB draw from like, not 5 yards out from the end zone. It's from pretty decent depth in the red zone, and like he just kind of runs through two guys, and he's just head down like he's freaking Taysom Hill. And you know, Baker used to be the guy like as a scrambler who would do that annoying thing that quarterbacks like him do, where they try to pretend they're Kyler Murray and they're not, and they like bail out the back of the pocket, they boot right, and then they lose a bunch of yards on sacks. Now Baker, and like I know this is a small thing, but Baker is a scrambler now, is like, no, I'm getting up the gap of the offensive line. I'm running downhill. And like as a scrambler, he has boosted up his fantasy floor. Like, yeah, he leads the NFL in touchdown passes. That's part of why he's QB2. Also because of these timely scrambles. So I should be able to say, oh, that's going to remain true. This guy Baker is still going to be this way. But I just wonder if we take these receivers out, that third variable of the way Baker is playing, is he going to play this confident? Is he going to play this dialed in without these two guys out there? I think that is an open question. I don't know if you have strong takes about the pecking order of the wide receivers, but there's no question that it's a loss here for this entire situation.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest open questions here is, you know, where exactly is like McMillan going to be used? Because if you've got Sterling Shepard on your team and you're going to play him, he's probably going to be your slot. And I feel like that might be the optimal use for McMillan as well. I kind of like Palmer, but I don't really like Palmer as anything more than a supporting receiver. So this one's difficult to sort out. I feel like it might be a really boring answer, though. And the boring answer might end up being Sterling Shepard, which doesn't excite anyone. But now we're building a passing game out of Cade Otton and Sterling Shepard, and that is not the same as Mike Evans and the version of Chris Godwin that we had this year, who, by the way, like was going to be a contender to lead the NFL in receptions. Like a serious all-pro season was underway. And I feel bad for Baker because like he's on top of everything else. He's getting something like 7 yards after the catch per completion this year too, like far and away the best rate that he's ever seen, which is, you know, a kind of measure of accuracy. He's just been great. He's like one game away from breaking his single season rushing high, we're not even halfway through this thing, and he's about to set a new career high in rushing yards. So that is a great point you've made. Like that's been part of his fantasy upside this year. I don't know. Like if you're in a one quarterback, you're in a 10-team league with one quarterback. Am I going to start Baker Mayfield with this cast of characters? I just don't think I can do it.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, I have Baker in at least one super flex league, and it's like, well, it's probably him or Justin Herbert. Like I still feel better about him than Justin Herbert and, you know, whatever the hell's going on there in Los Angeles. But I mean, just brass tacks perspective, again, from a ranking standpoint, Andy's got Baker at QB 15. I've still got him at QB 13, but that's only because I think this game could get pretty high scoring with Atlanta. Just a couple last points on this. One with the Mayfield thing, I've said to you on the show that there's probably no player I've done a bigger 180 on in the last 2 years than to going from like maybe an outright Baker hater to really just loving the way this guy has played. So I'm really hoping that I mean, a lot of the reason I was a Baker hater is just because, like, you see him in bad environments and it really, really goes poorly. So that's what my concern a little bit here is. But I want to believe in Baker. I want to believe that this thing is going to continue to work out. And then on the pass catchers, I mean, you said that the answer is boring with Sterling Shepard, but I'm telling you, man, from what I've seen, and look, I could be wrong. Maybe they get him in a better position here, you know, with Jalen McMillan and stuff like that. But on film, like, I think objectively their best receiver right now is Sterling Shepard. And it's like, I'm not even sure it's close, maybe you could say, like, that's tough. But I feel like my final answer on this with the pass catchers is the big winner is Kate Otten, who I think is a good player. But and then in the wide receiver department, I think Palmer probably plays most of the X because he's gives you the most vertical juice. Don't know if I love that necessarily. He's not like a tiny player, but he was more of a speed slot for Dave Canales last year. He's the X. McMillan's the flanker slot. Shepard is mostly slot, but a little bit flanker too. And I just think from a reliability standpoint, being where you're supposed to be, being open when you're supposed to be there, like, it's going to be Shepard.
I don't even mean that that's bad. It's just not the answer that, like, fantasy managers want, because they want to hear, that Jalen McMillan and or Palmer was always a secret superstar and they just needed a chance. Right. And I don't think that's the way this is going to play out. I think we're going to get a bunch of, like, 6 or 7 catch, 75-yard games from Sterling Shepard, and it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster with the other guys.
All right, before we take our first break, let's take one listener question. Like I said, during our burning question segment here, I will always take one listener question. If we got a good one and you guys send one in, we did get one. I mostly want to take this just, I mean, because the title is very clever of the email that was sent in. Flowers withering away. I mean, beautiful start from Zach S. Shout out to Zach S. who sent this one in to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Hey there, Matt, Dalton, Scott, Andy, and the rest of the Yahoo team. I want to vent about Zay Flowers. Again, I'll always just take you venting about something as well. He is a shining star, but very inconsistent. Before Monday Night Football, he had 2 stellar back-to-back performances, which made me think he will be a consistent starter. Even in this game with a favorable game script, he is someone who didn't eat with the rest of the team. Even though many experts, hey, Zach, we don't do experts on this podcast, but that's fine. Even though many experts considered him wide receiver 2, I'm getting tired of trying to predict whether he'll go off in a given week or if game script will be favorable. Are there better days ahead for him? Andy, what do we have to say for Zach here?
I mean, first of all, he got hurt last week, right? And
true.
And to assume that didn't affect him just because he played through it, I think is a mistake.
Very fair.
Number two, like, you didn't draft him among the first 10 or 12 receivers off the board in all likelihood. And that's the only group that you should really expect consistency from. I get, you know, it's a small little thing that gets me when people talk about receivers, like, exactly how many consistent receivers do you think are out there? Because those guys are generally the people who are drawing like 140, 150 targets. And that's just not a long list. So yeah, it's going to be up and down with almost every receiver that you start. You know, sometimes we get a great week from a player and we're like, okay, that's the baseline now. That's what I should be expecting. That's not what you should be expecting. Like, it just, you know, comes and goes. And we know that there are going to be weeks when Baltimore is just going to say, you know what, this is Derrick Henry's game. And he's going to touch the ball 25 times. And, if that gets us home, that's fine. Also, obviously, they have a hyper efficient passing game. So this is one of those offenses that we're going to want to be connected to. This feels a little bit like, man, I'm really pissed that Zay Flowers hurt himself last week, and we're going to have to follow practice reports this week too, right? Like, they got a bunch of good players, and the receiving core is another issue. Like, Rashad Bateman playing really well, a couple of huge field flipping plays last week. All of a sudden, you know, Mark Andrews has been reanimated. We know that Isaiah Likely is a good player, and it's all been fine because Lamar is just throwing 5 touchdown passes a week. But yeah, there are going to be weeks where they just ride Derrick Henry, and it's a quiet week for Zay Flowers. What we need more than anything is for Zay to be healthy, because I actually think, you know, if he's healthy, whether it's this week, the following week, He is still going to be the most bankable player in that receiving core on a game-to-game basis.
Yeah, a couple things here. I mean, number one, I do want to just sympathize with Zach that there's two things are so annoying with a wide receiver. And I'm the wide receiver guy. So like, I am sympathizing with you on this one, even though, yeah, I'm with Andy that you really shouldn't expect consistency out of any player, basically, except the like top elite guys. It is mega annoying to look at a box score that goes 2 catches, 10 yards, and then, or excuse me, 1 catch, 10 yards, 7 for 111, 9 for 132. Yeah. And then you get that like 1 for 11 game. So these two mega games sandwiched between, oh my God, like 1 catch, 11 yards. So annoying. I get that. It's also, I've said this about the Lions before. It is so, and the Saints, when they were killing teams at the beginning of the season, nothing is more annoying than a team puts up 40 points and their best pass catcher is the one who stays silent. Yeah. I get that that is annoying. But Andy's right that Flowers did get hurt at the beginning of that game, and they didn't need to, like, we got to keep Pepper and Zay Flowers because so many other things were working here. So I'm not concerned about Flowers as long as he's healthy, and I actually think that the usage that we saw in these Week 5 and Week 6 games against the Bengals and against the Commanders, that's more important than the Week 7 results. So I feel pretty good actually about Flowers going forward. And yeah, look, I mean, Hayden, I don't know if I said the stat on the show yesterday or if I said it to Nate and producer Colin off air, but Hayden Winks from Underdog had the stat that there were 12 receivers last year that averaged 9 targets per game. There's only 4 this year, and one of them is Wandale Robinson. Like, who has negative EPA on his targets, by the way. He's like the second least efficient receiver in the NFL in terms of EPA on his targets among like relevant guys. So that's how that's going. We're losing points by throwing the ball to Wandale Robinson one of the most times in the NFL. Crazy stuff. Update the damn counter on Sunday. I'm sure we'll get there. So it's just like what I'm saying by all this is just, there's not a lot of like consistent receivers in the NFL right now, period, because a bunch of them are hurt. And it's just kind of the way
I was going to say, we're also in this like anomalous year where so many of the first and second round guys are either hurt themselves or they're in like the Tua situation, the Tua Tyreek Hill situation, right? Where like it was just never going to go very well with the backup quarterbacks.
All right. So hopefully that helped. I think if anything, it's just level setting expectations. Like, yes, I sympathize with you that it's going to be frustrating. Totally get the recent up and down nature of Flowers' game and the extreme, like going from 9 catches, 12 catches, stuff like that, to 1, super irritating, blowout, and he kind of gets blanked, irritating. But yeah, and experts ranking him wide receiver 2. He is a wide receiver 2. Like over the course of the season, he's wide receiver 21. His teammate, by the way, Rashad Bateman's wide receiver 22. Just want to let everyone know that. Like there's going to be that up and down nature for all of these guys here, even if in the aggregate they are a wide receiver 2. So, all right, with that, let's throw it a break, and then we come back with 3 matchups that Andy says deserve your attention right after this. All right, Andy, let's get into the 3 matchups that you say, the arbiter of attention, you say these matchups deserve the attention of the people out there. Let's start with Eagles at Bengals here in Week 8.
Yeah, first of all, it was tough to pick 3 this week because we have some matchups that feel like marquee matchups, but they didn't quite crack the top 3 for me. We have some, I don't know, people might consider them questionable choices here, but I feel like coming into this season, we would have looked at this and said, oh yeah, Philly at Cincinnati is definitely one of the most intriguing matchups of the week. And I almost like, I don't know that there's a lot to talk about on the Cincinnati side. That's kind of the key fantasy skill players there, they kind of set themselves in your lineup, right? We know what to do with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And when they're both healthy, we know what to do with Joe Burrow. Chase Brown has really taken on a huge role. So like that's, I don't know. I kind of know what to do with my Bengals. I feel a little bit as if the whole of Philadelphia's offense is considerably less than the sum of its parts. And maybe that's just, you know, last week they get up huge on the Giants and they don't have to, you know, whatever. The Giants would have needed 4 days to score 28 points or whatever it was last week, right? Like that was over, a non-competitive game. And maybe this is just me overreacting a little bit to I think it was -2 yards from Devontae Smith. I think I got 1 catch for -2 yards from Devontae Smith. I would just, you know, I'd like to get back to, you know, the appeal of Philadelphia's offense was supposed to be, hey, we know where the points are going to be. And mm-hmm. it's only like four guys, right? And we can't even get many weeks where like all four of them go off simultaneously. AJ Brown has been a superhero since returning from injury, right? He's been great, really fun to watch. And some of this is just Jalen Hurts coming off like a 14 pass attempt game because he didn't need more, a couple of touchdowns. I would like to see Philadelphia feed everyone, put up a big number. I don't need them to win. Like, I think this is really fun. Like, they're going to be able to move the ball against Cincinnati. I feel like Cincinnati is going to be able to move the ball against Philly. I feel like we get a huge number in this one. We get a huge yardage total in this one. I just want to see Philadelphia like really put it together and Barkley have a day and Smith have a day and Brown have a day.
Yeah, actually kind of a lot. I'm with you that going into the year, this would be seen as like a marquee matchup, and it actually got flexed out of the afternoon slate to get your boy Caleb Williams in there, which we'll talk about that game in a little bit. My big prediction yesterday was we'd be talking about Bears at Commanders, and sure enough, that is one of the games we'll be talking about here. Never been more correct, more accurate, and more comfortable with a prediction in my entire life. Anyways, on this game in particular. So, a couple things here. One, I do think there's a lot of threads to pull on here, which, let's start with the Eagles offense, because you brought up Devontae Smith. Really funny, actually. My sister, you know, asked me like fantasy questions last Friday. She goes, I got to start either Devonta Smith, Jamison Williams, or Deontay Johnson. I think she ended up going with Smith, and she benched Deontay because, you know, he's dealing with like his whole body was hurt. And then, you know, talking to her yesterday, I was like, isn't it nice when there's just no right answer? Like, you don't actually, like, all of those guys, two of them actually had negative yards. Two of them had negative yards and one guy had one catch. So isn't it nice when there's just no right answers? I know that does not help all the things we said earlier about like wide receiver consistency and all that stuff. But anyways, yeah. So Devontae Smith coming off this negative point game. The last 2 weeks, coming off their bye, the Eagles have been 30th in neutral pass rate. And I kind of think that we're going to continue to see that because their run game kicks ass. Saquon Barkley is amazing. AJ Brown, like, and then so when they pass the ball, AJ Brown in the games that he's been healthy has like an absurd lead in the target share department. And why wouldn't he? As much as I like Devontae Smith, like, there's levels to this thing, and AJ Brown is just a level, maybe two levels ahead of a really, really, really good player in Devontae Smith. Yeah. So I think that, yeah, talk about, you're going to have to accept some volatility. Smith is good enough to you know, have a great week any game, but there's going to be weeks where he's super quiet because they're running the piss out of the ball. They should continue to run the piss out of the ball, and when they throw it, they're going to throw to AJ Brown in the superhero cape over there. So I guess the question, Andy, is do we feel like this is a game where the Eagles will have to open it up? And that brings us to kind of the Bengals offense, because, you know, I would say that I was kind of expecting the Bengals offense to really take off. In the last two games against the Giants and the Browns, two good defenses, but not like elite tier defenses, I would say the offense has been a little bit mid.
Yeah, no, it's fair. Some of that, again, quality of the defenses, but everybody that we really expected to get home is still getting home, right?
Yeah.
And Higgins has been really, really good. Chase is obviously great. Feels like forever ago that we were like worried about Ja'Marr Chase, and Ja'Marr Chase was mad at his usage, but he's been absolutely fantastic. So that's fair. But we really do need, the Bengals defense has been a little bit better than it, but like for a while there, it looked like the Bengals were just going to give up 40 every week, 35 or 40 points every week. And they've been a little bit better in recent weeks. They're now actually only allowing 6.4 yards per pass attempt, which is not where I thought they would be at the midway point of the season. So it's possible this game could disappoint. I've talked myself into a scenario, I guess, where Philly is going to actually have to put the ball in the air a little bit, and we can feed. I'm just asking them to feed two receivers. I'm not asking for too much here. Maybe, you know, Dallas Goedert is banged up in this one, so we don't really have a huge worry there. Just asking them to feed two guys. I think the Bengals against almost any team in the league can get to 24 points.
Yeah, 48 point total in this one, according to BetMGM. It sounds like Andy thinks it's more towards that total, or maybe even a little bit more. I'm not so sure. I think this game could be a little bit lower scoring. So we'll see who is right when we reconvene on Sunday for the recap show, Andy. Let's talk Ravens at Browns here for your next one. I don't know that we have too much to say about the Ravens. We talked about them a lot in the Zay Flowers section, but I know you're hyped to talk about the man himself, the man, the myth, the legend, Jameis Winston back under center for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not like people need to race out there and grab Jameis Winston in anything other than a super flex league. I'm pretty intrigued by what we just saw from Cedric Tillman. That was a ton of targets. That was a lot of action for him. He was clearly the guy who steps into the role that role. I always hate talking about like great players and their roles, right? But he is stepping into you know, a lot of those targets that would have gone to Amari Cooper. So he's a big winner in fantasy terms. Jameis, just a obviously fundamentally different quarterback from Deshaun Watson. We get Ken Dorsey taking over play calling. I mean, Jameis is a guy who, like, for his career has an A dot well over 10 yards, right? Like, Jameis is going downfield. Jameis is taking shots. I think we're going to get that from Dorsey as well. So there is some big play potential here. And yeah, I feel like something that we have come back to repeatedly this season is that, you know, this year's Baltimore defense is not last year's Baltimore defense. And they will give up some numbers. Oftentimes those numbers are in garbage time, right? We had that in the Cowboys game. We had that in the Bucks game. There are some late numbers to be had, but they are not, you know, they are not completely shutting you down and just, you know, locking you underground. They are letting you move the ball a little bit. So I'm pretty interested to see what we get from Jameis this week and exactly what the offense looks like and whether other people kind of get unlocked as well, right? Like I feel like with Jameis, there's a real path for David Njoku to get back to like top five tight end status, right? Like, he's probably going to get peppered with targets. That's maybe the guy I should have led with, right? Like, he could legitimately be a tight end who sees 8 to 12 targets every game for the rest of the year.
I believe he was the tight end one overall with Joe Flacco down the stretch last year. 14 targets for Njoku, 30% of his routes, according to Fantasy Points data in week 7. I do think he could end up being the real big winner here. So, yeah, I mean, he could be a tier one tight end by the end of Sunday, just if he continues to get that volume. And, yeah, I mean, there are, like, I play in some competitive leagues that I was surprised to see, like, Cedric Tillman didn't even get picked up on waivers. Like, you know, I think he's a guy that just – maybe people don't understand that. Yeah, he's not Amari Cooper, and there is no like Amari Cooper role, as you said. But Cooper is vacating the X receiver position. Tillman is a natural X receiver. He's been like they were trying to kind of get him on the field in ways, but it just doesn't make sense to not play him at X, which is why I think that now that Cooper's gone, you just naturally have a guy to step in there. So I did have somebody ask me a question. I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, but it was on Twitter. It was like, is Cedric Tillman like, you know, Bud Light Nico Collins? And I'm like, I'm sure they mean by like a guy that was is good on film but was never productive because of the situation. I think he's definitely an X receiver. I think Nico's more of like the smooth separation type, whereas I think Cedric Tillman is kind of in that like Cortland Sutton bucket of X receivers. But shoot, if you're picking up like a Cortland Sutton type of player off waivers who's about to walk into a boatload of targets with Jameis Winston, I do think that player can end up being interesting in fantasy. I just do think the target share could be a little bit nebulous behind Njoku here, just because like I'm not the biggest Jerry Jeudy fan in the world, but he is out there, he's running the most routes, and like I still do think Elijah Moore is going to command targets in like that shorter area too. I'd love to see, dude, let's get Elijah Moore a damn corner route with from the slot, like a sail route from the slot with freaking Jameis Winston back there. Would love to see it. But yeah, overall, I do think Tillman is the guy that is the, if I had to rank somebody rest of season for wide receivers like in Cleveland, I do think Tillman's the top guy.
Yeah, I think he's really just the guy who certainly gains the most value from this. Like, it was not much of a needle mover for me with Jerry Jeudy. I'm gonna need to see it repeatedly from Jerry Jeudy before I actually start feeling bullish about him. I think Tillman the clear winner there. As you say, this is probably the best use of him. Again, I don't think he's going to be like a consistent starter. I do think that Jameis Winston is the type who can play himself into being a guy that we are starting more often than not, even in one QB leagues.
Anything on the Ravens side, or do you just want to move to, you know, the game of the week here?
I feel like we talked the Ravens pretty well during the Zay Flowers question, actually, right? Like, they're very high ceiling to the offense. It's not going to be the same pass catcher each week who goes off. And there are just going to be weeks where they ride Derrick Henry into the ground.
Yeah. And I will say, just from a coping corner perspective, Mark Andrews, one more week of like him being usable, I think we got to have a conversation about taking him out of the coping corner. But we'll see. All right. Chicago Bears at Washington Commanders. Obviously, Andy, this game has a lot more juice in it if Jaden Daniels plays. But let's talk about the Bears. Your boy is coming off the bye here.
Yeah, pretty good matchup for them. They do get, like, the schedule does. I mean, obviously, part of the, you know, the Bears surge recently has been the quality of the defenses that they face. They face the Panthers. They face the Jaguars. And Caleb did what we needed him to do, right? He put up numbers against the bad teams on the schedule. It is going to get rougher in the second half. It's going to get a little bumpier for him. This is not a particularly bad matchup. There are plenty of Bears fans who are like, who see this cast of characters on offense, and obviously the defense is playing well. The defense is top five in the league, just in terms of yards, scoring, all that. Like, the defense played well, and there are definitely Bears fans who are focused on, hey, let's get in the playoffs and see what we can do. And they're a winning team right now, so it's not an unreasonable thing to feel despite the strength of the division. I am still somebody who just want to see Caleb thrive. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I don't think this Bears team, even in a weird NFC, I don't think this Bears team is going to make a deep, you know, January run. I just want to see Caleb thrive each week. And I want to see some of the early season mistakes, you know, disappear. I feel, again, they've played the Jaguars and the Panthers, and I always need to remind myself of that. But, like, I feel like, you know, some of the mistakes from week one, week two, I feel like we've gotten past that. And maybe he's the kind of player who's just not going to make the same mistake like two or three times. You know, I feel like there's been real development already. I hope that's right. I just would have loved to see, and maybe we still get it. Maybe we still get Jaden Daniels against Caleb Williams. That'd be super fun. That's what I want. And shoot, I want, you know, 10 years of that rivalry to be a really good one in the NFC. So that was was part of the appeal of this. If it's Marcus Mariota, tip of the cap to Mariota, who played really well last week. And I was, you know, you're just kind of reminded that, man, that is the right choice of backup to someone like Jaden Daniels. I like it when teams do that, when, like, we can just go ahead and play the same style of offense with our backup quarterback. And it's not, you know, it's not somebody who doesn't have any of the skill set of Jaden Daniels. So he played really well. Tough matchup against the Bears defense, which they'll give up a rushing performance, but it has been really difficult to just light them up through the air, right? And they're performing very well in the season. They'll take the ball away. It could be a little bit of a Brian Robinson game, I suppose, because we have seen some running backs, like, you know, pop some big gains against the Bears. But that's, you know, other than that, they've been pretty stingy. So tough matchup there. I think another good spot for Caleb.
Yeah. Just on the Mariota thing, I really don't think we maybe gave it enough credit on the Sunday recap of just how awesome that game was. An email and it deserved to be, but we just probably didn't talk enough that Mariota was awesome in that game. And legit, like, legit awesome. I think the film backed up the performance too. He was really, really good. Probably his best game, like, I don't know, maybe since his rookie year or something like that.
Yeah,
he was pretty electric. I just think it's worth noting too, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Mariota, but this Bears defense, like you mentioned, which is probably a top five unit, is a bit of a different beast than, like, I'm just going to name you some players who played. I'll name you all the guys who played more than 70% of the snaps for the Carolina Panthers last week. And you tell me, you stop me when you can give me an advanced scouting report on one of these guys, Andy Barnes. Safety, Nick Scott. Linebacker, Trevin Wallace. Safety, Xavier Woods. Cornerback, J.C. Horn. Okay. Former top 10 pick.
Oh, there's a name.
We know J.C. Horn. Michael Jackson, cornerback. Chandler Wooten, linebacker. Charles Harris, defensive end. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like I said, let me know and stop me when you've got an advanced scouting report on any of these guys.
Yeah. No, it's really not great. And again, that's part of Caleb's surge too, is, you know, a game against that defense. So huge grain of salt. But still, like, they, you know, we're talking about two quarterbacks who did what they're supposed to do against a bad defense, which is to look awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I do think even if Mariota's in here, I'm probably all your main guys are in your lineup this week from the commander standpoint. Robinson, definitely even Terry McLaurin, who he can add Mariota to the list of quarterbacks that Terry McLaurin has played with. And then on the Bears side, yeah, I do think Caleb is a top 10 quarterback. We all have him ranked as a top 10 quarterback this week. And do you have just kind of any lean on like Rome Odunze, post-bye rookie bump, Cole Kmet, Keenan Allen coming off big games last week? Anything there to finish this up?
Yeah, I think Cole Kmet has arrived at a point where, given the state of the position, you're just going to start him every week. And you got to know that there's going to be quiet weeks, and they've got, you know, they got a bunch of guys that they can work. Keenan coming off a very good game, obviously. DJ Moore is a guy that will be starting each week. But I think Cole Kmet has kind of entered that circle of trust. He certainly is for Caleb. And you're just going to have to live with the fact that there are going to be games where he gets 3 targets and 27 yards, and it's not a particularly noisy week, but I think he's going to be a real thing in the red zone.
All right, buddy. That's it. I appreciate you, Andy. We will check in with you on Sunday after this game and all the games on Sunday. Hopefully, are you going to be in good condition for the recap show?
As you were talking, I was just thinking about that and how miserable I'll be if these good vibes for the Bears don't continue, and how elated I'll be, and what a happy podcast it'll be if the Bears get a win.
Well, now I know officially what I'm rooting for. I'm not going to tell you which one it is. But I know which one. No, on a serious note, I mean, look, I obviously Andy is my he's my coworker. I also consider Andy a friend. So I'm rooting for his happiness, and I also want to say, like, it's much more pleasant to work with a happier person on the other end of the podcast than it is grumpy Barons, even if grumpy Barons might be good for content, just from a workplace, you know, enjoyment standpoint. And again, our friendship, Andy.
Let's think back to how much time we had to spend listening to producer Colin complain after the Cowboys last lot. Like, it took us like 30 minutes to get going on the podcast because Colin just had to vent.
Yeah, well, we didn't talk about Cowboys 49ers in this one, but it is worth noting. And I'm going to read this now that you've mentioned Cowboys. I'm going to read this stat that Colin basically like threatened to have me removed from the host chair if I didn't read this. This stat from Jamie Eisenberg of CBS: Dak Prescott is awesome after his bye week. In 7 career games after a bye, Prescott is averaging 28.1 fantasy points, and he only has one outing over that span with fewer than 22.3 fantasy points. So, hey. I would tell you what, Andy, you don't have to come back up here to do the solo recap of Sunday Night Football, but I will. So I'll be having to tell my Aura Ring that the bedtime is going to be even later than usual on Sunday, because I will have to be there for the producer Colin rant. So I'm hoping for, you know what, for my workplace standpoint and the happiness of my coworkers slash my work proximity associates slash maybe friends. We'll see. I'm rooting for Bears. I'm rooting for Cowboys. And I'm rooting for everybody's happiness on Sunday. With that, Colin's lighting up the chat now. It's just so great that we can talk about him when he's not on the show. I don't even know what he's saying. I'm not clicking on it. All right. With that, let's take a break. We come back, an actual serious person, Tara Roberts, will join me to talk to the players that you need to consider as make or break options for week number 8 right after this. Joining us now, as she always does here on the Friday preview episode, it is Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I feel like I've got whiplash with all of these trades and the rumors and Cooper Kupp and Matt Stafford. I'm ready for everything to be solidified so I can see my final fantasy damage, and we can move on with the trades no longer happening, because this has been a wild 2 weeks. We never see all of these big name receivers just moved this quickly. It's been a little overwhelming, but I feel like it was a decent first week with Amari Cooper and Devontae Adams, so we're just crossing our fingers that everything works out good with Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, Tara, because two things cross my mind. We already have probably one of the most injury-filled wide receiver seasons in recent memory, maybe ever. So we're constantly like readjusting expectations for insert wide receiver core here. All right, this guy's banged up. What are we doing with this? And then we also have all of these guys being traded. It adds to even more. All right, well, Cedric Tillman. Let's have a talk about right. Cedric Tillman here in week 8 of the NFL season that I didn't think we'd be having. And also, the NFL pushed the trade deadline back this year. It's not until November 5th. We're not even real. It's not as if this thing is tomorrow or whatever. And teams are still, Tara, behaving. And my problem, maybe some of it is because of injuries and all the chaos and things like that, I guess. But I mean, teams are still behaving as if, like, well, we got to get these deals done right now. Like, we got to get this done right now. And we got more time here. So I don't know what any of that means when I say all that, except maybe we need to just buckle up and expect more chaos here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, more chaos means more content, more talking, more football. So I guess, you know, look at the positive side of it. It'll be crazy for our fantasy teams, but hey, well, we'll be excited.
That's right. You know what? I'm not complaining because the content and the chaos pays the bills. Yeah. So, you know, we gotta keep these roofs over our head, Tara Roberts. We also got to keep the people dialed in here in terms of the make or break players heading into week 8. And a lot of these situations that you're going to be talking about here, we always say it's not strictly start this guy, sit this guy, this, that, and the other. We're trying to look at some of these underlying situations and try to uncover, you know, is this player going to make or break your lineup this week? And how can you maybe fit them in? A lot of these guys that we have to talk about here are based on injury chaos situations. So let's dive right into it. You've got kind of a couple pairs here with your first one. Let's talk about the Niners guys here at the top.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation where obviously we got to know more about Debo's situation this week, because that will really be a determining factor between how comfortable we feel with both of them. Because when we look at the 49ers offense, the wide receiver 3 isn't usually someone that has a lot of value. It's not like the Packers where we're sitting here and saying, okay, you know, the third option, we can roll them out as a flex here. We really want the first two guys that are in the pecking order here. So we still got to kind of figure out exactly who is going to play this week. But like, we have to go ahead and evaluate Ricky Pearsall and Juwan Jennings and figure out what to do with them in this 49ers offense, because at the very least, we know that Brandon Ayuk is out for the season. So one of these guys here is going to have fantasy relevancy guaranteed this week. Maybe two of them, depending on how we go with Samuel and Kittle. But looking at this 49ers receiving core moving forward, I feel like we got a nice preview last week. I mean, it's not going to be a true situation because it was a difficult matchup against Kansas City. Fantasy numbers were not pretty. This is not really an indicator of what we can expect of these guys moving forward, because in better matchups, better situations, there is going to be higher upside and value here. But looking at last week and, you know, the snap counts for the guys and the routes run, I thought it was really interesting how Ricky Pearsall immediately came out and had the highest snap count, had the highest route participation of all the 49ers receivers, and got a decent amount of targets there. Obviously not pretty from a fantasy perspective, but just seeing him on the field kind of gave me the comfort that this is not a guy that they're wanting to ease in. They want to get him out there. They want to get him running and feeling comfortable and involved in the offense. And maybe he's not going to be hit with that, you know, massive Juwan Jennings type of 10 targets right off the bat. But I've got a certain level of trust that I know this is a guy, a first round pick, a talent that they want to turn to, and they can see having a specific role within their offense. So I feel somewhat comfortable with him as a potential flex option here. But really for me, all of this kind of hinges on the health of Juwan Jennings as well, because when you look at him and the usage that he has, the clear trust that he has from Brock Purdy, if I'm stacking these guys up right next to each other, and I have to pick between one or the other, I feel like I trust Juwan Jennings more, even though he doesn't have that first round draft capital, but he's a guy that the 49ers have clearly shown they have level of trust in. We've seen him have massive high upside. We got the massive 11 reception, 175 yard, 3 touchdown game where he stepped up when Debo was out. So we've got the track record there with him. There's obviously other guys that are going to be a factor here, just not something that from a fantasy perspective, I don't feel like we should look at guys like Jacob Cowling and, you know, maybe Ronnie Bell, maybe a tiny bit of usage there, but not something that we want to rely on for our fantasy teams. So it really just comes down to these two guys right here. And quite frankly, they both have very interesting upside this week for me.
Yeah, super interesting. And like you said, I think a lot of it's going to hinge on whether Jennings plays or not. I'm with you that if Jennings is out there, He's the guy that I boosted up like rest of season rankings ahead of Ricky Pearsall, just because, I mean, like we got to give Pearsall some grace here. You know, I mean, this is a guy who dealt with a lot of injuries in the offseason anyways, and then was shot at the end of the summer. So he, I don't think, Tara, you're right, it was surprising to see him play all those snaps. And I don't think that was really the plan going into it. And then Ayuk gets hurt, Debo's sick, the whole deal. I imagine all week of practice, they're probably like, all right, you know, we're going to get Ricky 10 to 15 routes in this game and kind of see what happens. And then that didn't really, you know, that's not how it played out. Now that's not how it's going to play out the rest of the way, because we don't know what Debo's availability is going to be like. We know Ayuk's out for the season. So, and I thought it was interesting too that Pearsall, again, I don't know if this was by design, but he basically played all three receiver positions. He played some X, he played slot, he played flanker, which also is kind of what Juwan Jennings does. He's more of like a flanker power slot, but that's what's going to be super interesting. Let's say hypothetically, there is no Debo, and again, we know Ayuk's not playing the rest of the season. Like, where do these two guys line up in two receiver sets? Because, as you mentioned, we don't normally see the 49ers play a lot of three. Like, that third receiver is a guy who might be on the field 50, 60% of the snaps, as opposed to, like, Rams, Packers, you do these teams out there. Those guys are going to be on the field for almost 80, 90% of the routes and things like that. So, it really is crucial to get this right. And like, we haven't even mentioned the name Chris Conley, but he could maybe step in as that like veteran X receiver. I don't think he's definitely not a fantasy option. He's like a special teamer, but there's a lot of things kind of going on and a lot of things kind of like percolating here with this wide receiver core. It's worth noting that Dallas is going to be banged up in this game. Deron Bland might have had a setback this week. He could be a true like game time decision. Micah Parsons probably not going to play in this game. And the Cowboys defense has been brutal all year anyways. I imagine this is going to be a big Jordan Mason game, but if they're moving the football, they're running it well, they're scoring points, some of these wide receivers are going to be at least on our radar as well.
I completely agree. And you mentioned that they're very similar in terms of the roles that they can play. So it's not as if we can look at this and say, okay, I know for sure that Pearsall is going to get in there and play a role very similar to Debo. Or I know that Jennings is going to go out there and be Ayuk. We don't know that. They're very versatile guys. We saw Jennings right there with Ayuk outperform him when Debo was out. So there's like 10,000 directions that they could go because these guys are just so versatile. I in my mind, I'm like, okay, you know, maybe give it a week and kind of see if we get both of them on the field and Debo is out, and then we get a real true understanding of what this would look like. At the same time, you hate to not take advantage of the situation right away and miss out on that big boom opportunity.
Yeah, I think if Jennings is out there, he's probably a guy I'm trying to get on the field as a wide receiver three. And I still think it's aggressive to start Ricky Pearsall, but somebody I'd at least want on my benches at this point. And he generally did get picked up a lot this week, but just make sure, check, you know, your waiver wires, things like that. See if he's out there as a free agent, because I do think he is interesting. Real quick before we move on from this, what is this wide receiver room going to look like next year? Like, because Ayuk, he will probably, that injury is probably going to carry into 25. Sucks, but it's the reality of the situation. They adjusted Debo's contract, restructured it. So is he going to be on the roster next year? Jennings, they gave an extension to. Pearsall's a first round pick. It's wild. Like, this might be like a crowded room for a long time. But again, it's not relevant to our discussion this week, but just it's something I'm thinking about. And I do think actually that the next however many weeks of data that we get on this team is going to go a long way to figuring that out. But like I said, this is not the only injury chaos room that we're discussing here today. Let's move on to the next one here, which is another guy that could be a injury boost player here. That's Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Tara, producer Colin posed the question earlier this week, and I will pose it to you. Is this the moment for Jaxon Smith-Njigba with DK Metcalf potentially missing this game, or at the very least hobbled? And shoot, if this ain't the moment, if not now, when?
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit worried this is not the moment. I mean, it could be. But the problem is that when we're saying, okay, DK's down, there's going to be increased opportunities. How many opportunities do you need? Jaxon Smith-Njigba is averaging more targets than any Packers receiver. So, I mean, it's been there. The opportunities have been there. He's not lagging significantly behind DK Metcalf. DK is averaging 8.7. JSN is averaging 7.9. Tyler Lockett is at 6.6. It's just a matter of, you know, whether or not he can take advantage of those opportunities. And Geno Smith has been dealing massive volume. Last week was underwhelming, but often it's been above 40 attempts, mm-hmm. above 50 attempts. Like, it's just, you know, the volume has been there. And the fact that we had only got one top 12 and technically right at 12 finish from JSN is kind of concerning. At the same time, there's not enough of a separation between him and Tyler Lockett for me to confidently say that, oh yeah, he's just stepping into wide receiver one. It could just be exactly more of the same. Then again, at the same time, we've also got, as much as Kenneth Walker was so maligned of, he's just an early down back, Zach Charbonnet is going to come in and, you know, third down's this. Walker has, again, proven that he does not have dead hands and he can absolutely catch the ball. And we've seen an increase in targets there. So that could continue as well. There's not really a guarantee here. And then you combine that, and I don't mean for it to sound negative, because I do like the upside and potential for JSN this week. But at the same time, you combine that with the matchup against Buffalo, a team where we have seen week after week that the best way to attack them is on the ground. We want to, if I am Seattle, despite the fact that we've been going very pass heavy, I want to go with the Derrick Henry special here. I want to give 20 carries to Kenneth Walker and try to attack Buffalo that way rather than just aggressively going through the air. Now, granted, they might not go with that because they clearly enjoy the volume. And this is kind of the look of their offense. And we feel very confident in that. But without DK Metcalf, you know, maybe similar to what we were saying with the Bucks, they take a step back and say, we really need to lean on our talented running backs who we know have that incredible upside, who we know can dominate and win a game for us. We don't have to aggressively increase volume. So we might get the same kind of general production out of JSN despite the lack of DK Metcalf in this offense. It's a high upside opportunity, but I don't think it's as much of a lock as it would theoretically be. Like, in our minds, we want to say, well, you know, this is perfect. This is it. But I don't know if it's that perfect situation where he is absolutely going to come through with that high ceiling we've been looking for.
I'm not super confident one way or the other. And I think the key of it all is something you said early there, which was, how much volume do you need? Which, Terry, you're like a super nice person. From what I've gathered, super nice person, always great to me and everybody else. That's probably like the harshest thing you've ever said, which was very like underhanded. So if that's the harshest thing you've ever said, you are a really good person. But you know, he's kind of one of those guys, right? JSN, he's like a volume receiver. Think about a guy like Keenan Allen last year. I know this sounds crazy to compare JSN to Keenan Allen, but like, they're both sub 10 average depth of target players. I mean, Keenan Allen is like at his best an elite receiver, and his hands are much better than JSN, things like that. He wins in those kind of tighter spaces better, but they're similar-ish players so far this year. Yeah, JSN's run a lot of routes. There's been a lot of opportunity in that pass game, but he's been targeted on 20% of his routes. Keenan Allen's up there like 31% last year with the Chargers. And you see this year, Keenan Allen, when he doesn't have that volume, you need him scoring touchdowns like he did this last week. Otherwise, he's like a complete non-fantasy factor because he's in a crowded pass game. And look, the reality is Seattle's pass game is crowded. I do think if you remove one player, you get maybe four more targets pushed to JSN. That could be enough for him to be a Bud Light Keenan Allen type of player. I don't know if that makes your fantasy lineup. I don't know if that makes him anything more than a low end two, but I do think it gets him kind of on the radar, at least because Seattle's wide receiver fantasy usage has been so high this year.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I mean, there's the volume could be there. We get some more targets pushed, he can take advantage of it. But man, it feels difficult to trust because, yeah, you look at it, if you're not getting those touchdown opportunities, and thus far it hasn't been there significantly for him, there's not enough volume. There's not enough volume for him, unfortunately. So I agree. It can theoretically happen, and I want it to happen for him because this should theoretically be the moment. But
yeah,
unfortunately, it could very well be. And maybe I should have included, you know, like I did before in this, it could have been Tyler Lockett versus JSN, because quite frankly, Lockett could be that guy that steps up as the reliable option that Geno Smith knows that he can depend on. So it could go either way here.
Yeah, he's been the first down maker of this offense so far, and I could see him continuing to be that. So yeah, I think we're kind of like slight stock up for JSN, definitely. But is this about to be like the big eruption spot? We'll see. I think that he has to show some, or they, let me say this more so, he has to be used in ways we have not seen him used just yet. Maybe it happens. I'm with you. I hope it happens, but my confidence level is a little all over the place here. Final player here in this section is a Bears pass catcher. I mean, shoot, Tara, everybody's talking about all these wide receivers with Chicago. The game before the bye, one dude's out there scoring two touchdowns, doing long snapper duties. That's tight end Cole Kmet here, Mr. Everything for the Chicago Bears.
I feel like Cole Kmet should have like a permanent place on Make or Break, because that's literally just his entire persona. It's all or nothing. It's tight end one overall, or it's tight end 20. It's like there's no in between there. And that's not his fault, unfortunately. We mentioned all those receivers there in Chicago. And again, and you know, that's not even counting, you know, DeAndre Swift. It's just a too many mouths to feed situation. And Cole Kmet always just naturally falls last in the pecking order. So he's just naturally a very volatile asset. So when we're looking at him, we try and say, okay, well, how do we approach this? Because maybe it's a, you know, good matchups, bad defenses, he excels. Halfway there. Maybe it's not a 100% guarantee. He had those two boom games where he had over 20 fantasy points against Indianapolis and Jacksonville. Okay, perfect matchups, perfect setups. But you also would have think that, okay, why did we get dud performances against Carolina, LA Rams? These should have been excellent matchups for him as well. Then you turn and look to this week, Washington's defense. Now, and I'll say this, I feel like, you know, this is an overall coaching perspective, and a defensive-minded head coach just really willing his team to develop as the season goes on, because they started off as a layup and they're clearly not that anymore. Now, granted, you know, you face different teams and you can pull it together more. But when I look at Washington's defense, you can see that they are rapidly improving as the season goes on. And on the surface, this is technically not a good matchup for tight ends, but I did dig into it and kind of look at the tight ends that Washington had faced to kind of justify why their fantasy points were on the lower end of points allowed to tight ends. They faced the Giants, the team with, you know, Theo Johnson and Daniel Bellinger. They played Cincinnati with a team that can't decide whether or not they do or don't want to include Gesicki and Eric All. They face Arizona with Trey McBride out. So technically speaking, when I look at that and I'm like, I can't guarantee that this is actually a bad matchup there. And when you look at them and the improvements that they've made, I can easily see where Cole Kmet and this sneaks in. And this is one of those weird matchups where he gets that little increase in opportunity and maybe he benefits from a touchdown perspective when the offense is flowing and they're competing well and they're putting up numbers. He is a strong red zone target. So that, I feel like, is kind of the key there. If we get a good little uptick in performance here from them, a good little back and forth with Washington here, these rookie quarterbacks dueling and goal line opportunities and red zone opportunities are flowing. Chicago's been on a roll. I can see how that would actually continue and massively benefit Cole Kmet in particular here. So I, you know, if you got it, there's not bye week, so maybe you're safe. We mentioned, like you talked about earlier, Cade Otton has become someone who I don't even think is a make or break. This is like a solid start that you got a tight end one that you're putting in there and you're feeling fairly comfortable here. But if you are in a position where you have to turn to and you got to take that risk and you want that high upside play, Cole Kmet could be your dude this week.
I mean, it's like you said, if you don't have one of those top tight ends, you're just chasing touchdowns. Okay. You are just thirsting for touchdowns at this point. And why not a guy that has shown himself to be a touchdown maker attached to a quarterback who's on the rise coming out of his bye week in what could be a really fun back and forth game between him, Caleb Williams, and Jaden Daniels, if he plays against a secondary that I do think is improving in Washington. It's not just a complete cakewalk matchup anymore. Although again, got to check some of the recent opponents there to maybe do a little bit of adjusting, but still, it's a secondary that I think you can get over on. I think he's a good touchdown chasing bet there is Cole Kmet. So yeah, if I had to go down on the make or break side, I'm probably a little bit more on the make side, but that says maybe more about the position of tight end. I mean, I'm done chasing Isaiah Likely. I'd rather be chasing Cole Kmet at this point, if that kind of shows you where we're at. And with that, let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week 8, as it always is, with no teams on bye, more pressure than ever, our keys to winning is picking you some players that are going to make the difference in your flex spot. You got to get that win here. You got to bring this thing home. It's time to be serious about the fantasy football season. Wins need to happen. We got to get these players right. Tara Robertson, your pick for keys to winning. I love it. This is a guy who needs some respect on his name. Tell the people about this Packers wide receiver.
It's not Jaden Reed here. It is Romeo Doubs. It pays to throw a diva fit, okay? If you're a wide receiver and you're not liking your situation, you want more targets, you want more touchdowns, just throw a fit. It works. He pulled the diva move. He sat out of practice. He missed a game, and he was welcomed back with open arms. Snaps were really never the issue there. Targets just weren't where he felt they should be. And to his credit, he has come in over the past two games, significantly improved in terms of receptions, two touchdowns, and been very reliable as a flex option. He's on a roll here. I know it feels uncomfortable to lean into Packers players right now because Jordan Love is doing very Jordan Love things, very Green Bay things, and spreading the ball around the entire talented receiving core, which can make it difficult on a week-to-week basis to predict the upside of a given player. But if you want to try and predict, this is the week right here. Quite frankly, all Packers receivers are in play. The Packers are playing Jacksonville. We know that this is literally the ideal matchup here. The guaranteed layup defense, Romeo Doubs is very flex worthy this week.
I love it. Love the call of Romeo Doubs there. My pick this week is Denver Broncos running back Javonte Williams. Been talking about Williams a lot on the podcast this week. Guy who played over 60% of the snaps last week. He was the second most efficient running back in terms of guys who had 10 plus carries last week in offensive success rate. He was helping that team move the ball down the field. Also, I think people don't realize this, but he is third in terms of running backs in targets this year. It goes Alvin Kamara, goes Breece Hall, and it goes Javonte Williams. It pays to be the RB1 in Sean Payton's offense and getting those little gimme checkdowns, but the run game is really coming together in Denver. They're getting healthier along the offensive line, and this Denver Broncos team plays the Carolina Panthers this week. Tara Roberts, I don't know if you are ready to just name me all of the defensive linemen that are out there for the Carolina Panthers at this point, but it is quite an interesting group of players. It's a bad defense that's getting worse because of injuries. I think Javonte Williams is set up to be a running back to bare minimum again this week, and I do think he has upside to get into the top 10 backs if he can find the end zone. A guy who's the clear leading rusher of a run game that's getting better and is involved, I mean, shoot, actually just featured in the pass game for this team with the rookie quarterback. I really like the way that Javonte Williams is trending up, and if you're not going to start him against the Carolina Panthers, when are you ever going to start him? This is the week to really roll out Javonte Williams after a big Thursday night game in week 7. Tara Roberts, we've said it all. We've done it all. We'll be back on Sunday morning for Fantasy Football Live, me and you, starting at noon Eastern. But tell the people what else you got coming up on Yahoo Airwaves this week.
Make sure that you check out that Make or Break article so you can dive more into these players and get a more specific breakdown of that. And always on social media, there's like 10,000 things and lives and whatnot. But stick around and stick with us through Sunday.
Yeah, what a time. We're going into week 8. This is crazy. It feels good that we are in a good spot with the NFL season. We're in a groove, and hopefully all of your fantasy teams are crushing it out there and you're trying to survive some of these injuries and some of the chaos we've talked about all week long. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, week 8, Sunday, is going to be in the books. Andy Behrens and I will be back to recap and break it all down. Until then, we are out.